Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night open call on Blog Talk Radio. It is February 18th already. Can't believe it. We are, well, there's one of my cell phones talking to me.
There it is. You're making sound.
Yeah. No, that was just a text. Yeah, that was a text on that one. Darn, no money on that. But anyway, I'd like to welcome everybody to the Tuesday night call. We're looking forward to this. We should have some real good discussion tonight. We had a lot of good discussion on my call last night. And this is great to see everybody joining in. We got a lot of people jumping in the queue, and I'm going to get the rest of the crew here. Jesse, you want to go ahead and do the disclaimer, such as it is, and get us started.
Yep. Can you hear me, buddy? Are you sure?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
That's clear?
Yeah.
Okay, guys. And welcome everybody to the call. I just want to go through our normal and short disclosure. Basically, everything we discuss tonight, of course, shall not be taken as legal advice. It's not intended to be taken as legal advice. We're not attorneys. We don't want to be attorneys. And I'm sure there's several attorneys on our call tonight that understand where I'm coming from. If you want attorney advice, go seek it. Go pay for it, but don't come to this call for it. So, with that being said, welcome, everybody. And as Dave said, let's have a bunch of good legal discussion, and none should be taken as legal advice. So, with that being said, Dave, why don't you go over the format of our call for the next couple hours, and so everybody knows we got a lot of new listeners every week, and how to raise your hand, not raise your hand, and all that other good stuff.
All right. Very simply, the way we work things is to raise your hand when I ask you to do so, please. You can hit just the one key. It's very simple on Blog Talk. All you'll have to do is hit the one key right now. The only people... My cell phone keeps talking to me. The only people that need to raise their hand coming up shortly are going to be those who have good news and good news only. We will get to Q&A a little bit later, but please get yourselves ready to hit the one key, and then I ask you, and I will try and remember to do this as we go through the callers, after you are done with your question, once we get to those, or your good news, I ask you to please hit the one key again on your keypad so that it drops you out of the queue and it makes things a little less confusing on this end for us. So, again, welcome to that. We'll do good news first, and then when I make the announcement, please not before, when I make the announcement, you can go ahead and hit the one key for question and answer, and we will get to that. We do limit this call to 2 hours. When you come on with good news, let's keep it brief, please, so that we can get to the Q&A, which is really the heart of why we're here. We do want to hear about the good news, but a quick, short synopsis of your good news, rather than something more long drawn out, and I'll remind Jesse of that if he gets on his soapbox.
Hey,
and,
watch
that. See, I can do that because he's too far away. He can't hit me. But anyway, those of you that do have good news, you can hit 1 on the keypad on your phone right now, put you in the queue. We do want to hear about your good news. We need to hear about the good things that happen. And it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody getting a check. It can be something good happening in some form or fashion in what you're doing dealing with the debt collection industry. That can come in many forms, actually. So those of you that do have some good news, hit the one key, and we will get to you shortly. Jesse, did you have any other announcements or anything that you wanted to make?
Yeah, I have very good news of my own. As some of you have seen, I sent out a copy of that check for everybody to see. We settled with them guys, and no headaches, no nothing. They didn't even want me to. They took the fun out of it. I couldn't go to freaking Pennsylvania and take all their money. They wouldn't let me. So they actually wired funds in. I've never seen that. Never seen that. Dave, I know you had a handwritten check from them, but I have never had a settlement. They have wired money in. It blew me away. It's like they just didn't even want to deal with it. Here's the money. Of course, I gave them a $2,500 deduction, which is, you know, like I tell everybody, use your brain and your common sense when this comes. If you're going to wire money in by the end of the business day, and I don't have to go to Pennsylvania and I don't have all these headaches, you can have the $2,500. It doesn't matter to me, you know. And so That was my decision. It's just a business decision, you know. And I'll stick to it all day long. So other than that, no. You guys know the roundtable. We've got everybody in there. If you have any interest whatsoever, make sure that you at least send an email in to get on the standby list, because I know, as usual, you know the way this goes, Dave. People want to make plans, and then they go, can't do it, or I missed it, or whatever the case may be. So if you have any inkling at all that you want to be in the roundtable, go ahead and send in, and I'm going to send another email out tomorrow to make sure that you just sit on standby, okay? We're at a limit. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We've reached the goal. But that doesn't mean that, you know, five or six or two or one, whatever, won't make it in. It's just that simple. That's just the nature of the beast. So that's all I have. Other than that, Dave, our normal good news, you know, is fine. Oh, and then I'm doing my webinar tomorrow. Other than that, 3 o'clock. So that's all I have for the night, really.
All right. Well, Terry, John, any of you guys, Larry, any of you got any good news for us before we go out to everybody else?
Not me.
Nope.
Okay. All right. The only thing I've got is I still continue to get some calls on my cell phone from this one Looney Tunes outfit. I keep telling them, quit calling this phone and all that stuff. And you know, they don't listen to me. Of course, I guess there's nobody there because they're robo-dialing, you know.
Yeah, well, they're not.
They're using ATDS equipment, I believe, is what it's referred to. The only other good news that I know of at the moment is my friend Leon up in Kansas today sent a federal lawsuit, a copy of it with a letter to a company that was telemarketing mortgage loans and called his cell phone 10 times. And 8 of those calls came within 12 minutes. And 6 of them came within 6 minutes. It was pretty bizarre. But anyway, he sent the lawsuit to them, and that's the last gasp before it gets filed. So, well, he'll have to see what that is. But he not only has the TCPA for the automated dialer, he also has the do not call list. He had been on the do not call list for about a year before that. So he's going after him on Section B and Section C in the TCPA. And the statutory damages are $28,000. So that'll be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what he comes up with. So anyway, let's go see if we got some good news out here. Let's go to 702. 702, you've been unmuted. You got some good news for us?
Is that me?
If you were unmuted, you're talking to me, you got to be the one.
Oh, okay. I jumped in the queue because I wanted to ask a question, so you can pass me.
Okay. All right. I'm going to ask you to hit the one key on your keypad to take you out of the queue for the moment, and we'll come back to you.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Now, we've got someone here. Their number is just, it's all ones, 11111. Let's see if we can get them to come up. Caller that was just unmuted, do you have some good news for us?
Am I unmuted?
I believe you are.
Well, all right. I'm from calling from New Hampshire. I've been with the program about 3-4 months now and mostly been doing studying and calling in. I filed my first couple of lawsuits for FCRA about a month ago in local small claims, and I just made my first settlement. I've got a big foreclosure case coming up, so I'm going to finance it by going after these guys who have been breaking the law.
Smart move, pal. Very good.
Very good.
I wish more of our listeners and our followers would actually do
that. I settled for half of it, and the check's on its way, and I'm happy.
That's right. Good job.
Great
job.
Thanks
to Terry for her fatal flaw article. That was very useful.
Good.
Well, you're quite welcome. I'm glad it was helpful.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your good news.
I'll call back later with questions.
All righty. Please hit the one key on your phone right now to take you out of the queue, and then when I call for a Q&A, you can go ahead and jump back in if you would, please. All right. Let's go to 424. 424, you have
all right.
been. Go ahead.
Hello, hello, hello. You got that some guy in Las Vegas. Well, it's been a while, but I finally got a settlement for $2,500 from this
very
pain
good.
In the behind first somebody. But I think you know who I'm talking about, First Source. But anyway, they bobbed around a little bit, but, you know, like they came through. Sent me the little disclaimer that I won't tell, show, or whatever to anyone else, but, hey, I couldn't keep it to myself.
No, you don't have to tell who it is. That's the deal. That's all. That's all that is.
Yeah.
But that's great. Awesome job. Fantastic.
Oh, okay.
Don't
all
forget
right,
to
yeah.
post a copy of the check if you haven't dumped it already in your bank account. Forgot about it.
It's on the way. You know,
when you get it, make a copy, clean it up so we don't know, you know, who it's from, and or your name and your personal info, and put it on the form. Get you a big old pat on the back.
I thought the first one I was supposed to put your name on it and send it to you or something. Okay, I'm glad you told me that.
That's the old rule.
You got to watch out. He'll take you up on that.
That's right.
All righty. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you. That is great. I got to unmute Jeff here. He finally found his way over here tonight. Good evening, Sir Jeff. You've been unmuted now.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, what
sorry,
a deal.
I'm sorry, I'm late.
Oh, that's all right. Better late than never. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's go to... And 424, if you would please hit the one key on your phone to take you out of the queue. All right. If there's anybody else that has good news, I don't know, Jeff, do you have any good news for us tonight?
I'm sorry. I had myself muted, so it takes a moment to unmute me.
Yeah.
No, actually, I don't. I wish I did. It'd be wonderful if I did.
Okay. Well, I wanted to check with you because I think we cleared out the good news that we had for this point. So I guess we are at Q&A time. So all of you that have questions, now's the time to hit the one key on your phone, put yourself in the queue, and we will start taking your questions. We've got, over an hour and 45 minutes to go here. So let's see if we can get some good questions answered and help some people out tonight. Let's go to 763. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. This is Rosalind from Minnesota.
Hi, Rosalind. How are you?
I'm trying to be diligent here and learn.
I got your email.
Newer.
I've been up to my eyes. That's why you haven't heard back from me yet.
Yeah,
I did
I'm
get
sure.
It.
Anyway, I was... we were notified by the court that a lawsuit had been filed against us from a debt collector attorney on behalf of Capital One. And I just would like to just give a little bit of a summary of the background here. In December of 2012, this is the first time we heard from the debt collector claiming that they were representing Capital One USA and that we had an unpaid account balance of $19,078 and that it was turned over to their office for collection and that we should please send a check for that amount made payable to Capital One Bank but send it to this law firm address. And then, of course, if we couldn't make the payment, you know, to call them and that kind of stuff. And it did say that they were a debt collector trying to collect
the
debt.
Yeah, this is all typical stuff.
Okay, so the question I had, though, was if the check was being made payable to Capital One, is this law firm a debt collector? I mean, are they a third party? I'm assuming, and that's the way I am moving forward in my thinking that they bought the debt, because I know Capital One did tell me they charged it off.
No, they definitely didn't buy the debt because they want the check made at Capital One Bank, and they're not Capital One Bank.
Okay, so...
That's the one time where you can tell with absolute certainty that they didn't buy the debt.
Okay, then I guess I'm not
They are
sure
a debt collector.
I'm...
There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Okay.
Rosalind, are you a member?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Have you been studying in the beating credit cards and taking their money sections? Because that's where you should be.
I have been. I'm currently in the part two of beating the I'm in the not quite through the middle of that part two.
Oh, okay. So you're working on there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why I wanted to establish what you were doing and where you were working on things.
Well, then does that mean I move forward differently? Or what do I or
differently
do,
than what?
Do I move than them being a Do I move forward any differently than I would have if they were someone who bought the debt?
No. First of all, you're never going to know if somebody's bought the debt. You're only going to know in this one particular instance for sure that they have not, but it doesn't matter. There's really no difference to you.
Okay. Because
so the answer is no, you don't do anything differently.
Okay. All right.
Have you?
Because there had been a previous collector who had contacted us, but I sent the dispute letter, never heard again from them. Okay, then...
How long ago did this new company contact you?
This one that I'm talking about at the moment?
Yeah.
The law firm? In December 2012 was the first letter I got from them when they said they had been retained to represent... Capital One.
Okay. Did you send them a debt validation letter?
I sent them one. It was, you know, my version. It isn't anything that looks like what's on the website, but yes, I did.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what it looks like as long as you have the basic key language. Okay. So have they threatened to sue you, or are they just asking for money?
Oh, they filed a suit. Well, this is kind of a little bit unusual from what the way it usually goes, but maybe not. I'm not sure.
You're in Minnesota.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, that's
yeah,
the problem.
I know what. Okay.
That's the problem?
Larry, just have a quick question real quick for her. You said, I don't want to interrupt you, but you said that there was a earlier or a prior company that attempted to collect. You sent them out a validation letter, and then they went away. They never did anything else. And then another
That's
company
correct.
Showed up.
Then this one came along. That previous one was somewhere around August of 2012. The debt was charged off July 10th of 2012.
Yeah, the charge-off is irrelevant. So that doesn't matter to you if you or any of that. So I just want everybody to understand. Charge-off means absolutely nothing to the consumer. Okay. So, but Larry, wouldn't that be considered another attempt to collect a debt?
It's a violation from the first company, but it's too late for FDCPA violation.
Shoot, that's right.
What's your Minnesota
But they have been continuing, this law firm has been continuing to try to collect the debt. I have disputed it. Their second letter to me was that, that it was a demand letter and they're trying to resolve it. And that was in January of 2013. And then January 17th, I sent this law firm my first, it was actually my third dispute letter. No, the second dispute letter.
Okay.
Sent them a dispute letter.
Yeah, there's no value in one.
Pardon me?
There's no value in sending more than one dispute letter.
Well, I didn't know any better.
No, I'm
but
not.
They
I'm
sent
not
me.
I'm just saying that it's of no relevance at this point. When you sent them the first dispute letter, what did they send you back in return?
They sent back a letter that says, thank you for your letter. Enclosed, find the account information documenting the amount owed related to this account. And amount of debt, $19,078 as of January 23rd, 2013, calculated as follows, principal balance, and then it's the same amount. And that was the same amount that they quoted in December of 2012.
Yeah,
then the name of the creditor.
Hang on a second. Was this just on a piece of paper? It was not on a statement, like a credit card statement or anything?
No credit card statement. It's on the letterhead of the law firm.
Okay. It was just a letter with information on it then, right?
Yes. And their file number.
Has the number changed at all since July of 2012?
Which number?
The number they're trying to collect from you.
The amount.
The amount of the debt? No, but it has on the credit report. That has gone up. But not in what they filed into court. And then the rest of the information is that the name of the original creditor, of course, is Capital One, and then their address and the credit card number, the date the account was opened, which was in 2001, and the charge-off date. Okay, so that was their validation attempt.
Okay.
It was not, you know, I had requested that they validate everything under notary presentment.
No, don't go into any of that. That's all administrative stuff, so you want to stay away from that.
Okay. Then a day or two later, I got another one, which was, you know, that they were just still trying to collect. And I responded to that one as well.
What you're telling us, this isn't the important stuff. Let me ask you some questions that are important, okay? You ready?
Yes.
Okay.
I have to tell you is good, though. okay.
Okay, if you have something good, then tell us now.
Well, then in February, about the beginning of February, a process server showed up here with a summons and complaint. And it was set up like it was on a court letterhead for the district court here.
Okay, hold on. February of this year?
2012.
This was
almost a month after one of the, a month and a half after my first letter from them.
Okay.
So it was a summons and complaint. And it had not been filed as a case, and it did not have a filing number and no court stamp on it.
That's how Minnesota does it.
That's how Minnesota does it, exactly.
And it says you're being sued, and you must reply within 20 days to protect your rights, and you must respond to each claim. You will lose your case if you do not send a written response to the complaint, and then they talk about legal assistance, blah, blah. That was the summons.
Right. We're familiar with how Minnesota does it, so how did you respond?
I sent them a cease and desist and asked for identification.
Okay.
I asked them to identify and to send me the agreement they had between Capital One and them that they could represent Capital One to sue us.
Yeah. But you didn't follow the Minnesota rules of civil procedure, correct?
No.
Okay. So what happened to that case? Have you already lost it or what?
Well, then I sent that cease and desist and asked for all this information, and I didn't get anything. That was last year, February. Then
there's no obligation to respond to that.
Okay. Then in September, I got an interlocking interrogatory discovery with the admissions and that whole stuff that I'm just learning about, admissions, production.
Interrogatories.
Yeah.
Do
you
all the interrogatories.
Know if they've got a default judgment against you?
I don't know. Then now in now the 29th of January, the court sends out a letter that a case has been filed against us in the district court.
Okay. You need to read the Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure or whatever. I would imagine it's called the same thing everywhere. You need to find out if you've got a default judgment against you because you didn't respond to their complaint.
Huh.
Okay. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I haven't gone there yet, no.
Okay.
You mean the complaint that had three items on it that I had to answer?
Yeah.
Is that
the
okay.
one last year, yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the discovery request, are they asking for things about the credit card or are they asking for things about your income and assets?
Well, let me see, where is it here? They're asking for all kinds of stuff. They want to know who all is helping me do this, who's all aware of all of this. boy, I'm trying to find it here now. It's a thick, oh,
that's,
I know.
Thanks.
Here it is. It was, this is what came in September, and that was general, well, the definitions are in there.
So just give a summary of the question they're asking. It's one of two things. It's either about the credit card or it's about your assets and income. Which is it?
Hmm. Well,
just look at
it's
some
about
of the things they're asking for.
It looks like it's about the credit card.
Okay, that's
and,
a good thing.
Yeah, you're lucky.
A good faith, admit or deny only part of the, well,
What does it say?
When does
it? Go ahead and read it.
Well, it's 9 pages.
No, just read one of them. Read one of them.
Okay. A request. Exhibit A attached hereto is true and correct copy of the authentic and genuine customer agreement contract between plaintiff and defendants.
Okay, good.
Okay, yeah, good.
That's a
go
very
ahead,
good
Larry.
Thing.
And then all the others, like you failed to make all the, you know, I have to admit or deny,
right.
you failed
yeah, no,
to make
listen,
all the required
listen to Larry,
payments.
Please.
We got an idea. This is a good thing, what you're telling us so far. What is the date of those requests?
The date on
yeah.
this
when did you
interrogatory
get
was September 11th on the letter Ooh. that accompanied it.
Okay. Are there admissions?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the first thing. Part two is admissions. Part one is definition.
Okay.
Part three is written interrogatories.
Right.
Part four
okay.
is the production.
All right, listen carefully. Here's what you need to do, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You need to go down to the courthouse or go online and figure out exactly what's happening with your case. Make sure that there haven't been any documents filed that you haven't received. Okay?
I did go there last week. They had the summons and complaint and the affidavit of service. And that's all that was in there. Other than there was something that I hadn't seen before, which basically is the time frames or something about a time frame of 3 to 6 months that I didn't, and they will not give me a copy of it. I had to pay for it, and I didn't come there with money to buy this stuff, so I have to go back.
Okay. Well, listen to me carefully and think about what I'm saying, okay?
Okay.
There may have been documents filed that you have not received, including the complaint, including any motions, possibly a motion for summary judgment or default judgment. It doesn't look like that's happened, but you need to find out for sure. And you need to respond to that complaint somehow, and you need to respond to these discovery questions.
Discovery question. Okay.
You put yourself a little bit behind the eight ball. So far, you're lucky because it doesn't appear that you've suffered any major damage so far. But it's coming unless you take action.
Okay, then the discovery questions. I got through part three of your webinar, but that was overwhelming. I mean, I don't understand most of that yet because it's so new to me.
Yeah, well, you're not going to understand everything the first time through it.
You need to make some decisions and exactly how to proceed here because you're in a very delicate position. They're about to come down on you with a ton of bricks. And they could have done it a year ago, but they haven't for whatever reason.
So I answer the questions. How do I learn how to answer them properly?
Well, tell me one thing. How were they served on you?
This interlocking interrogatory came through priority mail. And that was in September. But the summons and complaint was serviced to a process server last year, February.
Okay. But you determined there has been a case filed and the complaint is in that case, correct?
Yes. I had to ask for it because it had an account number, and they gave me a copy of the complaint with the account number redacted.
Okay. So in theory, and again, think about what I'm saying, it's possible you didn't receive the discovery because it was sent by priority mail, not certified. But since you were served the complaint, even though it was before the lawsuit, through a process server, that was definitely received by you.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know if this matters at all. The process server, what I saw in the case, filed in the case, he said that he put the document into the post into my mailbox because I rejected it, and he didn't do that. He dropped it on my front step.
So
the mailbox is across the street. So
all right. So he came to your door. You opened the door, and he tried to hand it to you. Is that right?
Yes, but I was trying to find out who he was, or you know.
Yeah,
so
that's.
He said I rejected it.
Well, that's okay. That's almost certainly good service. If they haven't filed a motion for default, I think you can actually get away with filing an answer right now, which I would do tomorrow. And it's too late for them to file a default if they haven't already. I think. I mean, again, you need to check Minnesota rules, but I there's probably 95% chance that's correct. You guys agree?
Okay, my answer?
Yeah.
What?
Don't ask for a motion for extension of time. It's way too late to do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. They wouldn't like that.
Yeah, you might just piss off the judge. He's my friend.
I need assistance then in what kind of an answer. Is there something that I can use?
I will send you a couple. Rosalind is somebody that I know.
Okay.
I'll send you a couple examples so that you can look at it, so you can get the idea of what you got to do.
Yeah, get used to using the word deny.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so my focus has to be on the discovery questions. And
your first focus is get an answer into there, denying everything so you don't get a default. That's absolutely your first focus. Like Larry said, that should be done tomorrow.
Yeah. Personally, I'm not sure I remember receiving those discovery requests.
Well, they would have a document, a bank number.
No. Well, I'll discuss that with you later.
Okay. All right. Meanwhile, start preparing that federal lawsuit against the attorneys who are handling the case and the law firm. And do one other thing. Check your credit card statements and see if that account was serviced by Capital One Services, Capital One Bank, or some other entity of Capital One.
Mm. Okay.
You have to pay very specific attention to what Capital One entity was doing what, because they have multiple ones. They'll say Capital One, but it might be Capital One Bank or it might be Capital One Services. Each one of those is a different company, and it makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
details,
who did you write your...
Details, details.
Okay.
Who were you supposed to have written your check to originally? I'll bet it was not Capital One Bank.
It was Capital One. Well.
Bank?
Let me see here. It was Capital One Bank USA NA.
Is that exactly the same entity that sued
yes.
you? Exactly.
Yes. It looks like it because the statements, the monthly statements say Capital One Bank USA NA.
And who is the plaintiff in the lawsuit?
Capital One Bank.
The same one?
Not Capital One Bank NA USA?
Oh, yes, it is. It is Capital One Bank USA NA.
Okay.
We're very
detail-oriented, which you have to become.
Yes.
Can I interject just a moment?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Double-check that statement and see, the statement may say Capital One Bank USA NA, but see who it says to make the check out to.
Okay.
Or who it's mailed to.
Yeah.
Well, the address is Capital One Bank USA NA in City of Industry, California. And
okay.
I think...
Yeah, check the documents they sent you, including the agreement, and see
mm-hmm.
who's listed there.
Okay.
And see what the copyright is on that terms of an agreement.
That's what's wrong, too. It's 2010. And the account was open in 2001.
There you go.
And
yep.
even
so
Capital One has
there.
Sent me. Capital yep. One has sent the 2010 statement as well when they were sending information in response to my letters.
Trying to make it match up to things, probably.
They
right.
have never provided
yep.
any
yep.
Copy of a signed agreement.
Yep. Well, they don't have one, but... Anyway, okay, we've got a lot of people online. We're going to have to keep rock and rolling. So,
okay, but say this was valuable for a couple of reasons. One is it shows how important it is to know exactly what's happening at all points and make sure you're following the law and, you know, not administrative procedure, which isn't going to help you.
So this... the court sending me the letter informing me is proper service?
It's not a letter.
That's not, no.
From the court?
Yeah, it's not a letter.
That was probably more of a courtesy than anything else, sounds like to me.
Okay. It's notice of case filing and assignment is what it's called.
All right.
Okay.
Rosalyn, scan those documents and send them to me, would you please, so I can look at them. I don't know if, or
which
maybe
ones?
You already did.
No, I haven't. Which ones you want?
Okay. All of them. I want to look and
them?
See what you got. I want to see
okay,
what you got.
Okay, thank you
okay.
so much.
All mm-hmm. right.
Thanks a lot, everyone.
All right, you're welcome. Okay. Let's go to 773. 773, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hello, my name is Lenny from Illinois. I'm a recent member. I've been listening for a short time. I have a situation with Portfolio Recovery Solutions, I believe they're called. I pulled my credit report. They're on there. They've done a hard pull on my credit report. They sent me a mailing stating that I owe them $10,100 from an old Citibank credit account. My last usage on that account was probably in 2003. I think it was charged off or whatever. In addition to that, I received a recent call. And
this is getting interesting.
The person, it was a live person, obviously, no automated call. And when I inquired about the validation of the debt, I said, I don't know you people anything. And the man's only response was, well, He said, this is related to an account that you opened in 1986. That's the only validation he stated. I said, well, listen, when you have more information, you can contact me. You have my information, send it to my home with a little validation or whatever. In addition to that, I also sent him a validation letter from your format.
Yeah, did What's you send that move? Within the first 30 days after you
yes.
you got something?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. And
no, I didn't send anything.
Just as a matter of information, the statute of limitations is 5 years in Illinois.
The statute of limitations?
Thank you, Jeff. Statute of limitations is 5 years.
Okay, good. Okay, I didn't send anything to the credit bureau disputing anything yet. What do I have, 30
days? You're
going
to do that tomorrow, right?
Yes, okay.
Okay.
So, what scenario am I looking at? Obviously, I haven't done my homework because I'm new, so.
You want to get into beating credit cards and taking their money.
All right.
And you want to look up the frequently violated FDCPA guidelines and study those so that you can understand where violations have occurred because they've occurred.
Okay.
But you sent the validation letter out, so you did the right thing, and that's a lesson for everybody. Make sure that you immediately turn around. Anytime you get done for anything, send a demand for validation out to them immediately. Don't set it down and wait and have it get lost. It's very critical that you do it immediately. It's very much to your benefit. So you've done that. Dispute your credit bureau, and then get in there and be studying. You haven't had a threat of a suit or anything, have you? They didn't threaten to sue you, did they?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Should I check the county records to see if there was a judgment at some point? I'm not sure of that. I have never received any information or been served or anything.
It wouldn't hurt.
I was going to say, it wouldn't hurt if you want to do that. Chances are you're not going to find anything, but it just takes a little bit of your time to do that. But if they had threatened to sue you, that's a violation because this situation is way, way, way long past the statute of limitations. And Portfolio Recovery Associates is known to do that with a number of people. And
I've said a whole lot on this, but Jeff brought up the statute of limitations. You just said but nobody knows when the date of the last payment was.
He said he hasn't done anything since
2003. Right. That's been a long time. I know
that. Fantastic. Well, yeah, just make sure that the last payment was more than 5 years ago. That's all.
Okay. Yeah, he had said 2003. That's why I say it's long past it.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't catch that 2003. I mean, for some reason. So, yeah, they're done. There's been a lot of violence. Yep.
Okay, one other question. I'm getting toll-free calls from a lawyer's firm looking to collect a debt. They don't leave any information. Actually, I called that number, and it stated that they were a law firm looking to collect a debt. I must have received multiple calls, and I can't recall any kind of debt.
Was it landline or cell?
Landline.
Okay. You can Google the numbers. You don't necessarily have to call back. Google these numbers, and a lot of times you can identify who it is that's calling. But if there isn't anything out there, you don't owe a debt. Are you keeping records of the calls?
I just recently became aware of it.
I'm going to ask you the same question. Are you keeping records of the calls?
Yes, I can get the records, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. I would, if I were in your position, of course, I never give legal advice, none of us do, but if I were in your position, I would be documenting all of those calls, date, time, number called from, so on and so forth, whether they left a message, et cetera. You may be able to use it going forward, You may not be able to use it depending on what the circumstances are, but if you don't collect it and you could use it, then you don't have it. So err on the side of caution, gather information. There is no such thing as too much evidence, okay? And then continue your study. Sounds like you're on top of it.
All right. I want to thank you, gentlemen.
All righty. Thank you. All right. And if you'll go ahead and hit the one key, that'll take you out of the queue. That'd be great. Also, 763, if you would do the same, that would be great. And let's go to 702. 702, you've been unmuted. Hello, 702.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. I want to see if you can straighten this out for me. I have a foreclosure situation. They filed a notice of default in 2010. First, then after they filed the notice of default, they filed a substitution of trustee. I mean, from my understanding, they should have filed the substitution of trustee first, right, before they could file the notice of default?
No.
Doesn't matter?
And there's a SWAT. Yeah, of course it matters, but there's a – depends on how it went down. Is there assignments?
Okay.
Or what's going on? You see, that's what you have to look for. I can send you a notice of default and then assign it over to Dave and say, Dave, I'm not handling the account anymore. You handle it. Here's the notice of default I sent him. When you say filed,
okay.
Is it a case? They actually filed a lawsuit against you?
No, they didn't file a lawsuit against me. They recorded a notice of default. That's what I should have said.
Okay. Who recorded it? Give me Joe Smith, right? Joe Smith recorded this thing.
Yes.
Okay. And then what happened?
Then, after they recorded the notice of default, they recorded a substitution of trustee second.
Okay. So, look at the back date, the substitution of trustee, trying to get away with it, because if not, that would be no different than an assignment, right? Your notice of trustee is useless. Go wipe your behind with it, because it doesn't do me any good. You didn't have the authority when you filed it.
That's what I'm trying to get at. They didn't have the authority to file
it. Look at the date. So I'm asking you, is it dates? Did they try to backdate it? Or did they, you know, was it really dated then and then they filed it, you know, out of order? Did they have the authority to file it to begin with? That's the question you need to find out.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely am going to check the date. Now, my other question is, they rescinded the notice of default that they filed in 2010 in November of last year.
They rescinded
it? Okay. Yeah, the notice of default that they filed in 2010, they rescinded it.
Okay.
Okay. Once they rescinded it, they, like a month later, they filed a new notice of default.
Okay.
But they didn't rescind the notice of they didn't rescind the substitution of trustee that they filed in 2010.
Again, I've answered your question. You need to find out if they had the authority to file it to begin with. That's the first thing you need to find out before you can go anywhere else. That's going to give you your plan
okay.
of attack.
Okay. Thank you.
There's
thank
no
you.
Way to answer you.
I'll go and check, and then I'll call back some other time. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
All righty. Thank you very much. And if you
call
would, please.
Go ahead. I was just going to say,
if the caller would please hit the one key on your phone, that'll take you out of the queue. I ask everybody to do that. The previous two callers, if you would do that. All right, let's go to 770.
Hold on, 770. The reason I want him to do that, and this goes for everybody else, is you can't, it's just like a case. You cannot have a lack of standing at the inception of the case and try to get it going down the road. It's no different when it's a non-judicial. You can't file a notice of default if you don't have the right to file the notice of default, meaning you don't have standing, if you want to call it, to file it. And if they did that and they didn't have the standing to do it, that's a violation of the FDCPA. So now you can go after them for that. That's why it's important. That's all. I want to make sure everybody understands why.
Okay, real good. All right, 770, you've been unmuted. Go ahead with your question, please.
Okay, Jesse, on those same lines about the standing.
Okay.
Since I've been going over the webinars again and again, and I'm helping somebody else with an FDCPA case, something came to mind about the creditor. And I asked Dave last night, he said to ask you specifically tonight since this is up foreclosure, but it's in Georgia.
Okay.
The issue, I mean, what's stated as an exception is to FDCPA is a creditor collecting their own debt. Well, if the lender on a foreclosure is not the creditor, then they would be a debt collector. They would not be exempt from FDCPA, right? There's an audit to prove that they're not the original creditor.
Yeah, and a lot of the times with these lenders, they were just table funding, okay, which obviously you can't do anymore, but the deal. So they were the lender, but it was for like 30 seconds. You know what I mean?
Right, but they're not collecting their own debt now. They're collecting it for somebody else.
Yeah, well, just follow what I'm saying.
Okay.
You know, Dave and I are doing business together. I table fund it for 30 seconds. You walk out. I sell it to Dave. Dave then comes back to me and says, I want you to collect it. I am no longer the original creditor. I've already given it to Dave. Dave now was the secondary holder of that note, and then he gave it back to me now. See, so no longer am I the original. It's already passed. Make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
So,
now, let me say something, clarify this here. That scenario you just talked about, you sell it to me, I become the creditor because it's not in default.
Right.
And then I toss it back to you and say, here, why don't you go collect this, but it's not in default. So don't you become a creditor at that point?
She's talking about default. She's in foreclosure. So they took it while it wasn't in default.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know. I'm asking her.
No, it appears that they were the original lender. There's a warehouse lender that funded the loan, but their name stayed on the mortgage and the security deed and the note.
Right.
Now with them filing, you know, coming after foreclosure, they've got plenty of time to do the FDCPA and do it right, instead of like me. But they're not with the audit. It's proving that lender is not the creditor collecting their own debt. They're collecting on behalf of a trust or another owner or somebody else.
They're servicer.
They're not the creditor collecting their own debt.
Yes, I understand that. The biggest question, and you should know this by now, that it was under default when it was acquired, they're not considered a collector.
There's no way of knowing because there's no date on the note when it was transferred.
I didn't say that. I said unless it was acquired while under default, meaning I wasn't paying on it, and there is a way to know that. I haven't paid on it in a year. And they said, God, they all of a sudden now I'm dealing with Joe Schmuck over here. Now you know he's a debt collector.
Okay.
You just brought up a whole other issue, though. If there's no assignments, then why is that the schmuck over here trying to collect on anything?
Exactly. Yeah.
No, not exactly. That's a whole separate issue.
Yeah, I get that issue, though.
Separate
that one I get.
Yeah, well, then attack them on that one. That's foolproof. That's the easy one to go after them on. So, Dave, you see where I'm going? These are all little things. There's never any clarity 100%.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
so,
well, this is what we were talking about last night.
Yeah.
And I was telling her, you know, this hinges on were they, was it in default when they acquired the right to collect?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, we don't even know if they even have the right to collect. That's a presumption.
Exactly.
Because there's no assignment. So that's violation
right.
of helping families save their homes, you know, the TILA Act, all that other stuff. Now you brought up a whole different can of worms. You see? A whole, it's a good one, no doubt, but it's still a whole different one.
You can use all of them.
Absolutely. You can absolutely go after all of them because they violated all of them, for sure, no doubt about it.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
Okay, sweetie.
All right, that take care of you?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome. All right, and please don't forget to hit the one key. Let's go to 813. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave.
Good evening.
I have some foreclosure questions. My friend is in foreclosure. He's had an attorney working on it for about 4 or 5 years, and he dumped the attorney in October. And now he's negotiating with the lender. But he's also going to file a complaint against the Florida Bar because he verbally in October said that he wanted to break his contract with the law firm. And then in December they sent him paperwork to sign in order to do that. They billed him for, he made a payment in November and told them that it was the last payment he was going to make. And they billed him for December and also for miscellaneous costs dating back to 2010. Then they filed a charging lien. And my question with respect to that is, do I advise him to address the charging lien complaint to the Florida Bar, or should that be something that's addressed within the courts?
Both. He can do both. Doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Why isn't your friend on the call?
Yeah, I don't get
his,
that.
His work schedule isn't such that he can make the calls,
okay.
but he listens
okay.
to the recordings.
Okay, good. That answers the question.
Yeah. But I would do both, put it that way.
Okay, you would do both. And should he expect to have a hearing date for the charging lien, or is that something that just gets filed like a mechanics lien, for example?
Oh, yeah, that's just like a mechanics lien. It's going to get filed in public record, and that's it. Nothing else.
Okay. And does he need to address that? Is there going to be a hearing about that, or?
Well,
or
what
will
do
there
you
be
think?
No hearing?
There's no hearing. Just a lien.
Okay.
So
there's no reason for a hearing.
False lien. Yeah, think about this. They filed a false lien in public records because he told them, I didn't want your services. They continued on with services. Isn't that a fraudulent attempt to collect a debt? And aren't they liable
Absolutely
under the FCPA and FCCPA and all that other good Florida stuff?
Got it.
Go to their website, and if they identify themselves as a debt collector, copy and paste that information and print it out.
Okay, well, they're not identifying themselves as a debt collector because he was under contract with the attorney's firm to represent him in the foreclosure.
No, you didn't hear what I said.
Okay.
Go to their website, and if they identify themselves as a debt collector for any reason, for any purpose, grab that information.
Oh, okay, I got it.
That makes them subject to FDCPA, possibly, and FCCPA for sure.
Okay. And my last question would be, when we were talking earlier about the last payment having been made, if it's more than 5 years, then it's not collectible. Does that apply also to the note attached to the real estate?
Yes, but you got to do some special things in Florida.
Okay.
But yeah. That's all. We're going to go over all that kind of stuff and all those strategies at the roundtable. Because those are very in-depth issues that need to be set up appropriately. If not, you're going to fail miserably. And that's just that, you know, that's not for the average person yet. If you don't know what you're doing with just common everyday things, you really have no business fooling with that.
Okay. Well, he certainly does. You know, he's certainly not far enough along to to grasp what you're talking about, Jesse. I'm sure he's not. He hasn't had that much time to study and that sort of thing.
Yeah, most
so.
Aren't yet. Yeah, yeah.
Right. I'm focusing specifically on the TCPA portion of the website.
Yeah, it pays real well. I like that.
it does. I just filed my first lawsuit a couple weeks ago, and I'm just very excited about that. But that's what I'm focusing on, and I absolutely refuse to go to the foreclosure area because I know I'll just be inundated with too much information and get confused with
smart,
what I'm doing. So
smart approach. That's right. Very good. That's a very good decision.
Yeah, focus on what you need at the time.
Right, right.
Right.
Right, and that makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Well, thank you all so much. We're just ever so grateful to have you here every week. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you,
dear. We're grateful to have you guys. I think it's the opposite, isn't it, Dave?
yeah, really. I mean, you know, we could sit here and talk amongst ourselves if it wasn't for all you guys. We're, you know, we love what we do, and we appreciate you guys. And your hard
really
work that you put in to take what we help provide and put it into action because, you know, without you guys, our time would be totally wasted. So, all right. Please don't forget to hit the one key on your phone. Let's go to 702. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I called you guys last week and told you about I had filed a RASPA notice, but that's because I didn't know whether or not my loan was securitized because I had sent it to you guys and you haven't got back with me. But you finally got back with me and I found out that it was securitized and I want to move forward from that point. But the people, when I sent them the RASPA letter, they didn't send me nothing back. They just sent me, I mean, it wasn't nothing that was in the letter that it was supposed to send back. They just said that they didn't have the loan that this was Aqua, and that U.S. Bank had it, and they didn't have the information to send me. And my mortgage been, I haven't paid in 5 years, so I just wanted to hear what you guys had to say about that.
You haven't paid in 5 years.
There's nothing to say with that.
Yeah, Jesse, you were breaking up there.
I said there's nothing to say but nice. If you haven't paid and they haven't sued you, you're in pretty good shape.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, you've got to find out what your limitations is in your city or your state, because what's going to happen is when they finally do come, if and when they actually do come, they might not be able to. So you have to find the actual law in your state and be familiar with that law.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Familiarize yourself with that. Sure.
Thank you.
Okay, buddy.
All righty. Thank you. Let's go to, and please don't forget to hit that one key on your phone. Let's go to 602. You've been unmuted.
All right. How's everybody doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
All right, good. Good. This is Jim in Arizona, and I am preparing to file a lawsuit for TCPA violations caused by a telemarketer some time ago. I'm just looking for clarify a few things regarding filing the suit. One of the things that I've kind of run into is I've noticed that I've got them accounted for approximately 15 violations, and I found on the website where they may be subject to $3,000 according to a case that I've heard Jesse talk about before. I think it's Meadows v. Franklin Collection Services.
Yeah.
So, but I've heard Jesse mention that each call is worth $3,500, and I'm not sure where that $500 difference is.
Well, you got a $1,500 for TCPA, you got $1,000 for your state law here in Florida, and $1,000 for FDCPA. But yours is telemarketing, so they're not trying to collect a debt. It's strictly straight TCPA. And then, of course, do not call us if you're on that.
I'm on the do not call list.
Well, then you can go after that.
Okay, and I've kind of looked around for that, and I haven't been able to find that. What's the fines associated or damages associated
being on the... For your do not call, you know, we get our damages under Section B in the TCPA, right?
Uh-huh, right.
Okay, all right. The frequently violated FDCPA, not the FDCPA, but the TCPA information that the Jesse had posted only covers B. What you need to do is go online and Google that and find the stuff from Cornell, and you go a little farther down, and the do not call list is in Section C, and your private right of action is C5.
So that's on Section C of the...
C. C5.
Of the TCPA?
Correct.
Okay, yep. So there's a separate award for that. Or...
Yes, there's a separate private right of action if there's more than one call in a 12-month period.
Okay.
Go so and read that later part down there that relates to the do not call list.
Okay, and so if someone... one thing I want to clarify is I never told them not to call. The very first time they called, I was frustrated. I just hung up. Now, they called right back, and they said, I've got a voicemail where they stated, the gal stated, Mr. So-and-so, I don't know why you hung up on me. I'm trying to help you. Okay?
Well, sure, they're trying to sell you something.
Yeah,
well, of
course. Hey, oh, goodness gracious. Let me answer your question. Don't worry about it. They had no right to call you to begin with. End of story. That's it. Doesn't matter what she said, you said, doesn't matter.
Okay.
You don't have authority. You don't have to say, don't call me anymore. You don't have to say any of that. You don't have to answer the phone. They don't have
the
right
phone
to call.
Ring. Correct. As soon as the call is placed, and they're in violation of TCPA, that's an automatic.
I'm just trying to shorten your thinking because everybody overthinks all this. The plain language says specifically that they have no right to call you unless it's under you've given them permission or it's for emergency purpose. It doesn't say that you have to do anything, say anything, nothing.
Okay.
So that's all. I don't know where you guys get this from. It's added language that's not there.
Well, you know, obviously a lot of us aren't, you know, spending a lot of time doing this, so it's something that's totally, for many people, just totally new.
To something, it doesn't matter how long you've been there. It reads ABC, it's ABC, you're adding D. It doesn't take a scientist, it doesn't take 50 years of experience, it's just, it's not there. So if it's not there, don't add it. That's all I ever say to anybody. Don't make a mountain out of a molehill. That's all. Take it right on its face for what it says. It has nothing to do with experience or I'm a genius or I'm a guru or anything. I don't add the D because the D is not there. Period. That's all.
Okay.
Simple as that.
Okay.
This is so easy. I'm telling you guys, it's so easy. Dave can admit, all of us will tell you, it's easy when you look at it on plain on its face. It's when we start putting our emotions, our nervousness, our fears of failure, our fears of confusion, that screws it all up for everybody. When you look at it, and for me, for Dave, for all of us, we've all been through those stages, and now we can all look back and say, wow, we didn't, it wasn't
that hard. The KISS principle works really, really good. Just read what's there.
Yeah.
Don't read anything else into it.
That's right. I'm telling you, it really helps simplify things for everybody. It really, really does.
Yeah. All right. Do you have another question?
Okay. Yeah, a couple of short questions. So it's easily that this could be, you know, 45 to 50,000. So I'll be taking them to federal court. Do you know whether or not there's any minimums with federal district court?
No.
Okay,
no, because
so
you're
no
not
going to
be in diversity jurisdiction that requires 75,000.
Right. Now, why would you worry about a minimum if you got 50 grand? You thinking it's going to
For the jurisdiction and venue portion of my...
Diversity. You didn't know the difference. Yeah, no, you're fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And then parties, one of the things in the sample lawsuit or petition states something about a foreign corporation. I went online. I could not find them listed in Arizona as a corporation, so they're not registered in Arizona. They are registered in Colorado. So I'm trying to understand foreign corporation, domestic. I'm sure if they're in Arizona, they're a domestic corporation because that's where I'm at.
To be honest with you, that's not critical in your pleading.
Yeah, I don't think it's really critical, but I just want to make sure that I get my information correct.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is it's not critical. I, quite frankly, in all the lawsuits I've done, I've never once said whether something is a foreign or domestic corporation. Not once.
Okay, so I could probably leave out that section in the parties.
I think that's
section.
Exactly what comes from what I've done, right? I've never used it, and I've been fine.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't really need to worry about it a whole lot, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Except in a state like Florida, for instance.
Yeah, really, you know, I really did think it was fairly insignificant, but I just wanted to, you know, in the event it needs to be there, I want to make sure I understand who's the foreign party. And whether, you know, I don't know if I want to bring up consequences that they have because they're not registered to do business in the state, yet they're obviously reaching into this state.
You're trying to get too involved. You have no private right of action on any of that. If they're not properly licensed, that's not for you. That's for the state to enforce.
That's my thought.
So you don't even want to bring that in.
Yeah.
Okay, Arizona? Go ahead, Jesse.
No, that's all I was going to say is even in the state of Florida, they have to be registered to business as a debt collector here. I can't do anything about it regardless because that's for the state to enforce. It's not for me to enforce.
Yeah. So why even bring it up in my lawsuit?
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I'm substantiating what Dave said is all.
Okay. All right. Any need to bring in Arizona revised statutes in a federal case?
Why? For what purpose? Aren't you bringing the action under a federal statute, 47 U.S.C. Section 227?
I am.
Okay.
I can't remember who brought it
up. You're
earlier.
Not dealing with a debt collection issue, so you're not
correct.
You're not dealing with a FDCPA or a state mirror statute. You're just dealing with telemarketers, which is under 227. And the do not call list falls under the same thing. So.
Okay.
No need.
Okay. Fantastic.
That KISS
Thank
principle
you,
again. Boy, that just sneaks up
time.
On you and hits you. What?
I will remember the KISS principle.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It really does work well. It really does if you apply it on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think what happens is you get a little turned around sometimes when they come back at you and confuse you or try to confuse you. And sometimes, and a lot of times, it probably works. I know at times when I read.
Yeah, it does work, and that's why I keep saying, let me finish here because I want to make a point to everybody. That's why I keep saying how absolutely important it is that you really understand these statutes. If you just go read it, well, yeah, I think that's pretty much what it says. That's not anywhere near enough. You need to understand that statute frontwards, backwards, and sideways. So when somebody comes along to try and BS you, you know in a blink that they're doing it, and you can call them on it right on the spot. Because that's what's going to help you get in a better position to get a settlement. Because if they get any sense that you don't really know what you're talking about, then they're going to take advantage of that, and they're going to try and buffalo you and beat you down. Whereas if you show that you know that thing inside out and backwards, and they try and pull the wool over your eyes, you call them on it and tell them just like it is, the other side is going, ooh, crap, here's somebody that knows all about this stuff. I think we better settle with this guy. This could get expensive. That's what you want to create on the other side of the fence, and you do that by having the knowledge, knowing it inside out and backwards. I can't emphasize that enough.
Yep. You know more than your adversary, always.
Yep.
Makes sense.
Okay, that take
Makes
care
sense.
Of
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, gentlemen.
All right, you bet. Keep working at it. I know sometimes it can get a little confusing and overwhelming. Believe me, I've been there. But, you know, I was there not that long ago, and if I can do it, any of you can do it, because I'm not real smart. All right. Don't forget to hit the one key, please. Let's go to 760. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
You know what? I'm sorry. I accidentally pressed 1 when I went on the call. It was kind of late. But since I'm on the phone, I'll ask one question. I'm trying to look up the statute of limitation for California, and I've been Googling, you know, how long you have to place a lawsuit on debt collection.
Yeah, those are the wrong words. The statute that you're looking for, you mean you want to a debt collector, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so what you need to look for is what does the statute that you're suing the debt collector under say? FDCPA says 1 year. The Rosenthal Act, I think, is 2 years. That's your California Act. So you're looking for the wrong search terms.
Okay.
Follow?
Now, that would be – go ahead.
And that goes, the only reason I'm commenting on that clearly is for all the other listeners, because we get that a lot, Dave. People say, God, I can't find this, because you're looking for the wrong, you're in your head it's one way, and then you put it down on Google a different way. Even though you're thinking the right thing, it's just not coming across.
You
got to think in terms of the statute of limitations of the law,
yeah.
Not your state. That's the difference.
Okay, and that goes for, like, obviously, for a mortgage, right? For, like, a foreclosure stuff, right? Same thing, right?
Doesn't matter. Yeah, there's a lot more involved with a foreclosure. But you asked a simple question. I gave you the simple answer. If you want the complicated question, you got to go watch some of the webinars and start studying.
Yeah. If you're going after them for an FDCPA violation, very simply, the violation has to have occurred within the last year, 1 year statute of limitations.
Yeah,
FCRA is within 2 years. What?
Right. FCRA is 2 years, but again, Dave, here goes back to, you know, the cart before the horse. Is the actual mortgage company or servicer or debt collector to begin with?
All that stuff's got to be determined, right?
All this leads to more, you know, rabbit holes that you got to study up and understand. If not, you know, you're not going to be able to get determination. So that's all.
Okay. I'll do a little more research on that.
Mr. Dave Mack, when he says, keep it simple, stupid. Trust him, I'm telling you.
I'm pretty simple. I'm not a very smart guy, but if I can do this, just about anybody ought to be able to do it, really. I'm dead serious.
All right, I'll do more research on
that.
All right. Yes, thank you.
All righty, thanks so much, appreciate it. And please don't forget to hit the 1 key to take yourself out of the queue. All right, let's go to 817. Or is it 617? No, it's 817. That's in the Fort Worth area. Hello, 817. You've been unmuted. 817, going once, going twice, gone. We're going to go to 919. You have been unmuted.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Just had a couple questions. In reference to initial disclosures for the voicemails, in what format would you recommend conveying that to the other side?
I don't understand what you mean to the voicemail.
Like the voice is a TCPA case. The voicemails that I have is evidence that they've called and left on my phone. Now, am I supposed to get that transcribed, or do I record it? Because I've recorded it into one of my audio workstations, and I could put it on CD, but I was wondering, how do I file that in the court?
You don't really need to file it in the beginning. They keep that as evidence for later on. If you wanted to, you could transcribe it. Just say You know, they called and left a computer-generated message that stated, pop, 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 pop.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. And,
but remember, when you're starting out your lawsuit, you don't try your case with your complaint. That all comes later on. And then TCPA, right. You know, you can put some of the stuff, depending on how many calls you got and what evidence you got. If you've got pictures, like if you're like Jesse and you take pictures of the face of the phone showing the number, the time of the call, et cetera, so on and so forth, he likes to put that up front as exhibits. Well, that can push you toward settlement, PDQ, because they're seeing that, oh, my God, this guy's got all the evidence right up front here. We better settle with him because, you know, he's got us already.
Okay.
So that's the value in doing that. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir, it does. And another question I have is the company that I'm dealing with is called Texas Guaranteed, and it's a combination FDCPA, TCPA case, and state FDCPA. And what they're claiming as a defense in reference to the FDCPA is that they're a nonprofit fiduciary for the United States Department of Education and that they are exempt to the FDCPA. I've referenced a case online called Pelfrey versus Educational Credit Management Corp. And there's an opinion that ruled in that favor. And I was just wondering what your guys' take was on that in reference to dealing with student loans.
I'm not sure on that. Jesse, Larry, you guys got comments on that?
What I'm hearing is that if you're attempting to collect a student loan, you're not liable, I'm sorry, under the TCPA. Is that what you're saying?
Under the FDCPA, they haven't claimed any defense on the TCPA yet. But the FDCPA, they're exerting that they're exempt due to the fact that they're a nonprofit organization that is a fiduciary for the U.S. Department of Education and was actually created by the state of Texas's legislature.
Did you say they were a guarantor, or are they actually trying to collect
correct. Well, they say they're a guarantor. But all the information they've sent me says this is a debt collector, an attempt to collect a debt, all information to use for that purpose.
Yeah, like that, yeah, and say, no way. You've self-admitted you're a debt collector. What do you mean? Why wouldn't you say you're exempt? Why won't you say what you think, what you just told us?
Yeah, I think they're trying to have it both ways.
Trying
to have it both ways.
Yeah, we're not a debt collector. We're exempt per statute, da-da-da-da-da, law, da-da-da-da-da. Not, oh, we're a debt collector on the letter, and then when you sue me, I'm not a debt collector.
Right, and that's the thing, because I asked the lawyer when I initially met with him on the 26F conference, I said, you know, you guys are claiming this exemption, but every letter that you sent me says that you're a debt collector. You know, why does it say that if you're claiming not to be a debt collector?
Right.
And he said, oh, they just put that on there because they have to fall within federal guidelines. And I'm like, what federal guidelines? The only thing that
the only federal guideline that requires it is the FDCPA.
Exactly.
Right.
Is there a Boeing line that requires them to lie to you? I don't think so.
Oh, you know, you were talking to a lawyer, right?
Yes, I was.
Okay. His lips were moving?
Her lips were moving, yes.
Her lips were moving. You know what happens when a lawyer's lips move?
Lies come out their mouth.
Thank you.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I was on the right track because I'm like, you know, I see this case, this Supreme Court ruling that rules in favor of what they're saying, but I'm like, your evidence that I have says you're a debt collector. That's what all your documents say. So,
well, I'd keep after them. I'd make them prove it up.
No, that's what I was thinking, too. All right.
Yep.
Cool. All right, I think that's about all I have. I appreciate it.
Alrighty. All right. Thanks much. Appreciate it. And please don't forget to hit that one button on your phone. And we're going to go to 224. 224, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please. Hello, 224. I'm hearing stuff in the background. If you don't talk to us, we're going to mute you and move on.
Hello.
All right, you there? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. See, I've got kind of a simple question for you.
Yeah, you've got us turned up. Can you turn the speaker down in the background? We're hearing a delayed echo back there.
Oh, yeah, okay. I've got my speaker on. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we can hear you.
I've got a fairly simple little question for you. I'm in a foreclosure, and last month I was hit with a summary judgment for foreclosure and sale. And then I went back to court, and I filed a motion to vacate the judgment. I've got a hearing set for next month. Anyway, like I said, I'm just not sure when I go to court for that hearing if I'll be talking to the same judge in the same court or if it will be a different judge.
Well, nobody knows that. What state are
you in? I was going to say, there's no way for us to know that.
Oh, okay. All right. I just thought maybe I'm in Illinois, you know, but I wasn't sure. And
we could think that there's a fair chance that you would have the same judge, but that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah. Okay.
The point is, if you wanted to vacate the judgment, you had to have a specific reason to do so, and you need to be absolutely prepared to make your arguments, make legitimate arguments as to why it should be vacated.
Oh, yes. I've got that pretty well down.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going to be sending them an affidavit before I go to court just to make sure that they got them this time and read them. Because last time they evidently didn't read my motion, so.
Did you ask the judge if he read your motion?
No, I didn't.
Okay. That's something, if you feel that, you know, something's been overlooked.
Said,
Your Honor,
yeah.
Your Honor, have you read my motion and the exhibits with it?
Yeah. Well,
make him commit
said,
to it. Well, yes, I have, or no, I haven't.
Yeah. He said to the other lawyer that that he read the last motion that I sent in, and as he said, it's not different from what he sent before. And then I objected and went, and the other lawyer then found something that.
What was the basis of your objection?
The objection was that I already had a release on the mortgage. That was in question, and the other lawyer found that one number on the two document numbers didn't line up. The last number on the one was a 5, and the last number on the other was an 8. And she said, this release doesn't relate to this matter. And the judge looked at it and says, I'm finding it for you. And, you know, it's just over in like 5 minutes.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question. How many digits were in that number?
I believe 9. It was
okay.
And only one number
was different?
Yeah, the last number.
Okay.
All the rest
okay,
were the
yeah.
same.
The court would probably look at that and go, 8 out of 9, correct? It's probably a typo.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
that's what the court did. That's why I said it probably there isn't any difference. There isn't a problem. You were arguing it was something different, weren't you?
No, I was arguing. I thought it was the same. I didn't know it was different. I mean, they had the same PIN number on the release, and my name was on the release.
Well, you say a release. What, a release of lien?
Release of lien, yes.
Yeah, okay. But you're saying that the lien was released so they don't have any lien?
Yes,
is that what you're trying
right.
to argue?
That's what I was trying to argue.
Then what was the argument by the other side?
Well, she said she hadn't seen that release and she wanted to look at it, and then she found that error, which was obviously a typo, and the judge took a look at it again and said, yeah, I see, it's not the same. And then he ruled against me. And
yeah, but you didn't answer my question. What was the argument on the other side? You're saying that the lien was
released.
The
other side, she said that she found, she said these docket numbers or document numbers don't.
No, match. I'm not talking about the document. I'm talking about the whole situation on the release of the lien. You're just focusing on one number. I'm talking on the picture with the foreclosure. You were trying to argue to the court that they don't have a lien, that it was released, right? That's what you were trying to show the court. Okay. What was their argument on the other side that, no, Your Honor, we've got a lien? What were they doing in relation to that?
They didn't really bring it up.
Mm-hmm. We're not getting the whole picture here. I don't know. I mean, based on what you've told me,
it was so fast. You know that she never said we have a lien or our notice. You know. That we have a note or anything, and I have.
Well, I mean, they're trying to foreclose on you. They had to produce something to show the court that they had a legitimate right to foreclose, or at least, you know, try and show something.
Yeah,
I mean, like I say, there's information we're not getting here. It's not making any sense to me.
That I didn't get either. Like
well,
I said,
I don't know,
was,
Jesse.
You
got a suggestion? I mean, I'm.
No, I'm listening and I'm confused. Literally, just confused.
Yeah, I am as well.
I haven't said a word because nothing makes any sense to me.
Here's what it looks like to me: that they, because there was that particular release of lien was one number off, therefore it couldn't have been a release of lien against that piece of property because it was one number off.
Right.
And that's bullshit.
That was what their argument was, right.
That's bullshit.
Well, I know,
you know
it is.
Even if it was a typographical error, they did not make a mistake in the long written nomenclature. Did they?
What do you mean by that terminology, Jeff?
Your name, your address, the document that
it
released.
No, everything else matched up perfectly.
Right. So you allowed them to hornswoggle you with this supposed one number off,
yes,
and ignoring all the long written nomenclature.
Yeah, it so surprised me when he ruled against me so easily. But see, at that point, I didn't know that it was only off by the one last number. He just looked at it and says, "Oh, you're right. It doesn't match." And then he says, "I'm finding for the plaintiff," and that was it.
Right. Yeah, they buffaloed you.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I didn't want. I was hoping I don't get that same judge.
Well,
right.
You need to better understand what you're arguing, I believe.
Right.
I mean, you're from what I'm gathering, and you know the answers you've given, and what you're saying is, you don't know how to fully answer the issue here, and you're going to have to do some dramatic improvement in that, or you're not going to get very far in front of the judge again.
Yeah, I know. I realize I should have brought it up in the text, but I was thoroughly confused by what happened.
Yeah. Well, what is your specific question that we can help you with?
I already asked. I was just wondering if I was going to get the same judge when I go back
to the
motion to vacate the.
There's no way to know that. I'd say there's a fair chance you'll get the same one, but whoever you get, you're going to have to be boned up better based on what I've heard from you, and being able to argue it, or you're probably not going to get very far. You know.
I realize that. Okay.
Okay.
That was about it. Thanks a lot.
All righty. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Please hit the one key on your phone to take you out of the queue, if you would. Let's go to a whole bunch of ones. Maybe that's a Skype caller or something like that. But all I've got is a whole bunch of ones on the board. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Well, that's number one here in New Hampshire. This is Doug.
Well, all right.
I called earlier with my first bit of good news, and I have two questions for you. One, my mortgage was transferred from IndyMac to Ocwen last summer, and I stopped paying it because I did not like the whole transfer to the new servicer, and I started researching and so on. Now, I sent Ocwen a validation letter and disputed the debt, and of course they didn't answer properly. I have since been getting a number of phone calls from three different outfits.
Yeah, your voice is getting real faint.
Sorry.
Can you get closer to your phone or something, maybe?
I've since been getting calls from three different outfits. Ocwen, GMAC, and Resolve.
Boy, aren't you lucky.
Yeah. Well, Resolve claims to be calling on behalf of Fannie Mae. This is a Fannie Mae mortgage. It was supposedly transferred into Fannie Mae the day after the note was signed back in 05 or 03 or something. So my question is this. Since there is a discrepancy in the paperwork between who actually owns the note, Resolve would therefore be a debt collector. Am I correct?
That factor alone ain't going to change things, but if they're all saying they have the right to enforce, right? That's what you're telling us, right?
No. The question of who actually owns the note is up in the air. Nobody's proven to me who owns the note, and nobody can tell me who owns the note, although Fannie Mae is claiming to own it. So does Bank One West, and so does Ocwen. They all claim to own it.
Okay.
So somebody's lying here, and my question is, for suing under the TCPA...
Seems like I would all of them.
Sue all of them.
That's what I would do.
And then make them prove in court that they had the right to place these calls.
Yeah.
All right. I've just joined your group. The whatever the special group of 50 is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know when those calls are going to begin, but
read the emails. It says mid-March right on them.
Mid-March, yeah, that's right. I did see that.
Yeah.
The second question is regarding the do not call registry and the separate cause of action. Could you tell me which section that is again? Is that under C or B?
C is what Dave, tell me exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's C5, Charlie 5.
Charlie 5.
Right.
All right. I guess that's it.
Okay.
Thanks
wonderful,
very much.
Wonderful. All right, you bet. Thank you. All right, and please don't forget to hit that one key. Let's go to 517. 517, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hello. This is John from Michigan. Sorry, I got a mouthful of cheese. How's it going?
He's a cheesehead. He moved from Wisconsin.
That's right.
All right, hold on. Let me wash it down here. All right, sorry about that. This is a foreclosure case. I had a hearing. Well, the foreclosure was going to take place on the 15th of January. Had a hearing set for the 13th. It was an ex parte temporary restraining order. Now, this is all through a lawyer. Okay. And, okay, then that got moved. The judge moved it, and he wanted a show cause hearing on the 23rd. Well, then that got moved by the other side because they wanted to work out a loan mod. So that got moved to the 13th for the hearing, and my lawyer had sent me the Friday before that, the 13th hearing in February here, he sent me loan modification papers from them, and I immediately called him and told him, don't waste my litigation money on this because I've already been through a loan mod with these guys. So the day before that, before the 13th, they put in a motion for an intent to take it to federal court. Now, does that sound? Pardon?
Why would somebody who's foreclosing go to federal court? Under what law?
Yeah, that's bizarre.
See, that's the bad thing about having a lawyer. You don't really know what the hell's going on.
Oh, no. That's the good thing about having a lawyer, that you're supposed to know every damn thing that's going on. And if you're not,
right,
then you need to find a different lawyer.
Right.
Or a different client.
Yeah, so you got it completely back.
Well, here's the deal. Now, they want to work out a loan mod because they don't have the assignment. And why would I put my neck in the noose for them, to help them?
Well, how can they do a loan mod if they don't have an assignment and they can't even foreclose? How the hell do they have the authority to even make a modification?
That's what I'm saying. But then my lawyer came back and says, well, they're probably going to get the assignment. Well, no, they can't because they bought.
I love those assignments by the lawyers.
You tell the lawyer, well, you'll probably get paid.
right.
Yeah, but no guarantees.
Okay. All right, well, since I'm up in the air on this now, I don't think they
you
can
shouldn't
move
be.
Forward.
That's the problem. You shouldn't be. You should be well informed of what's going on.
Okay.
And if you're not, you need to get that way.
Right.
If you're paying somebody to do something, you tell them what you want. You want to be informed of every single communication that lawyer has with the other side. You want a copy of every single document that's sent from the other side to him and everything he sends to the other side. Every single one without exception.
There's another way to look at this, and it is really quite simple. You gave away the doingness of this. You did not give away the responsibility for it. You're still responsible for what that attorney does, and you better know what he's doing, and you better put the clamps on him.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so,
you know, when you hire an employee to do something, you hire them to do something, but you are responsible for them.
Yeah. You've got to hold them accountable for what they're supposed to do.
Okay.
Okay, do you have another question there?
Well, where does that leave me now, though? I mean, if they pulled it out of that court and said they're going to go
They're a plaintiff?
No, I was the plaintiff.
Oh, and what is their basis for moving to federal court?
Yeah, if he's the plaintiff, Jeff, obviously he claimed some kind of federal issues.
They are claiming that this is a federal issue because this is under New York law. They bought out AB and AMRO, which was the original lender on the mortgage, but they never did an assignment from AB and AMRO to City Mortgage before AB and AMRO folded or was absorbed and dissolved.
Weren't you just talking about that recently, Jesse, that very specific situation?
Yeah.
You want to re-elaborate on that to clarify for this gentleman?
Clarify? What do you want me to clarify for him?
Well, he's wondered about there's no assignment. Does there have to be?
Well, of course there has to be an assignment. How did you get possession?
That's what I'm trying to get you to come out and clarify for him.
My point is, if you have no assignment, what good is the note? Having the note doesn't give you the right to enforce it.
Okay. Well, you know, I did a securitization on it with you.
Yeah. I don't know what else to tell him, Dave. I mean, it's pretty obvious. If you have a note and you can't tell me, what'd you do, find it blowing down the street? Well, what does it matter to me if you have a note? I just won two trials. Both of them had notes. Who cares? Doesn't matter to me. It's irrelevant.
The matter of whether somebody has the right to foreclose and has the note, or actually just whether they have the right to foreclose.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to, because many, many servicers are holding the notes and the mortgages, but they don't have the right to foreclose. They just have the right to collect payments. That's it. End of story. So what does that matter? Yeah, it sounds to me like you need to get a whole different attorney. That's what it sounds like.
I hear you. But I was just wondering if I can go after these guys for an FDCPA violation, because, which I don't think I can, because they were the servicer at the time.
Yeah, and?
At the time of what?
At the time of the foreclosure, or when I quit making payments. They were the ones that I was sending payments to.
So they didn't acquire the right after it was in default, is what you're saying. Correct or not correct?
Yes, I believe you're correct on it. Because I was making payments to them since, I think, 08 or 07.
Okay.
City mortgage. But they don't have the assignment, which I knew when I quit making the payments. I knew from the county records that they didn't have it.
Now,
so bottom line for him,
problem.
Jesse, what do you think is short-term course of action should be?
They can take it to federal. Let them move it to federal. I think you're going to be better off in federal. But at the end of the day, if you have no assignment and you're threatening to foreclose, you're threatening a legal action you cannot take. Simple as that.
Right. Well, you know, I did the securitization audit with you guys, even though I did look it up and it was a Freddie Mac, and but I did do the securitization with you. And they did send me a great case that's ongoing right now. It's in the it's in the Court of Appeals up here. It's called the Kelly's case, and it's exactly the same case that I got, you know, where they didn't have the assignment.
That was right then and there. That's it.
And they did the ruling on it, even in the State of Appeals, ruled on a similar case with J.P. Morgan. So, I mean, for them to take it to federal, I mean, it's like they're still not going to get around Michigan law. It doesn't matter what New York law is. What do you think?
I think that you have a case made for you while you had the audit. Go read it, understand it, and educate your attorney on it.
Okay. But even though they weren't able to come out with any of the
No, it doesn't matter. New York, Michigan, Timbuktu, Turkey, it's federal, so they can use the cases all across the United States.
Okay. Because City Mortgage is claiming that since they bought them, that since they bought AB and AMRO in New York under New York law, then that means that they got all rights to...
What if they had sold it? What if Emerald had sold it to someone else before the before they bought them?
Right.
Okay.
So stop making that argument and go find out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Dave,
well,
we got to keep moving here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
don't too long on that.
I appreciate your time, guys.
Circular. Okay.
All right. Thanks much. Yep, we're running down, guys. We want to make these last ones. We still got some people in the queue, so let's go to 7:04. Let's try and be as concise and quick as we can, get more people in because we got 10 minutes left. You're on 7:04.
Hey, good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
There you are.
Okay,
go ahead.
This message is for Jesse. Okay, of course, I've been...
You got a message for me? Who called me?
Well, give me your number. I'll definitely call you.
You said this message. You mean this question?
Yeah, well, message question is... I'm in the queue, so I got something to say to you. I got a question for you. Okay, so I'm in foreclosure still, fighting foreclosure, I should say. And I wanted to know, you just said something about if there is no assignment, then... Of course, they don't have the right to foreclose anyway, no matter if they claim they're holding a note. So
the note is not, see, again, holder of the note and holder in due course or holder with the rights of the holder in due course are all different scenarios. So when somebody says to me, I'm holding the note, like they did actually in the deposition, I snatched the note from them and I said, now I'm holding the note. Mm-hmm. Big deal. What does that mean?
Okay,
holding
great.
The note. See, you have to have standing when you file a foreclosure. If you don't have standing, you know, you don't have a foreclosure. So I can't take a contract that's between you and Dave and go file a lawsuit against somebody based on that contract because that's not my contract. I'm not a party to the contract, and I don't even have any documentation to show that I have the right to even partake in that contract. It's such a simple
right.
Mm-hmm.
Situation. Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense
okay.
why anybody get complicated with this. I don't understand it. It's so easy.
Mm.
Okay,
so
what's your question?
I have a question about, I'm trying to find out if the attorney who says they're out representing this servicer who's litigating against me every time I go to court, I was trying to send him a letter, send a letter to the CFO, just trying to, or the CEO, to find out if there is an actual attorney of record for Auckland Loan.
You aren't going to get any answer from a CFO or a CEO of a company.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't deal with stuff like that.
Energy. Right.
Okay. So don't even bother. Waste your time.
No. That's a waste of time.
Right.
It's a waste of a stamp.
So then how would you go about actually finding that out?
What do you mean? Why would I? Are they suing you right now?
Yeah, I mean we're in foreclosure, you know, they're trying to take the property. But
okay, so
every time I go into
there'd have to be something signed by a firm.
Well, there isn't. Not in the record. I mean, every time we go to a hearing, I just object to him when he says I'm the first one time he says he's the note holder he's the attorney for the note holder. And then he's saying he's the attorney for Auckland in another case. In my foreclosure case, he said, I'm the attorney for the note holder, and then he has the trust name. But now that I sued them here in state court, he's saying, I'm the attorney for Auckland Loan Servicing. So I always object to that. You know,
an attorney can represent more than one entity.
Well, that may be the case, but if there's nothing in the record proving that he's representing anyone, how do you know what he's saying is true if there's nobody from the principal saying, he's representing us? So I was just trying to use that as another angle when I go to court, if I could get something, you know, have something.
Well, there's no notice of appearance, is there?
Say that again.
Was it appearance?
No.
Are they required
to
put a notice of appearance into a case in your state?
No, not in state, no.
Okay, no.
Then you're pretty screwed.
Yeah, pretty much you can do.
So when
because
the attorney comes
if they come in and say they're representing them, the court's going to recognize it.
Yep.
Because they're an officer of the court.
even though there's no one there to verify anything that he's saying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the only other thing I wanted to ask you, Dave, was that TCPA response that you put on, out last night, is there a way, did you have, is that out on the forum and on the site, the site?
What, you mean the language I was talking about?
Yeah, the language and also
no,
your,
that was
your
just
action.
Something that was something out of an email I sent to somebody. You can just go back and re-listen to the audio on that. That's not, that information isn't posted anywhere. That was just a
okay.
communication I had with somebody at a company, part of it.
Okay.
Okay.
And what about the complaint itself?
I never did a complaint. Settled with no litigation.
But I thought you said you sent them the complaint and the summons and the mail.
With the notice of intent to sue?
No.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
No, on that, I'd have to go back and look. I can't remember whether I had the complaint on that. But, no, I don't have that posted. I'd have
okay.
to go through and sanitize that. And right now, I don't have time.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Let's go to, boy, my eyes are getting bad, 617. That's what happens when
Hello.
You get old.
Hello.
Good evening. How are
Hi,
you?
Good evening, Dave. I'm doing well, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
That's good. I have a question that's similar to several callers back regarding a student loan. I have a company that claims they're not a debt collector. They're a servicer for the – I'm calling from Massachusetts, by the way. So the Massachusetts Educational Finance Agency, known as NEFA, has hired ACS. It stands for, I looked them up, it stands for Affiliated Computer Service, or Services, or something like that. And supposedly, I guess there is Xerox company. And I'm wondering if anybody has had any dealings with ACS. I mean, they're across the country. I read an article that Los Angeles County had hired them to collect on traffic violation tickets that were behind and so on. So, but they claim they're a servicer anyway, and they're contacting my wife because my wife was a co-signer for one of my kids' student loans. So I was wondering if anybody out there has any kind of dealings with ACS claiming they're a servicer and not a debt collector.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. ACS Education, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Has she made payments to them?
Actually, it was my son's loan. He was making the payments, but he's come up on some hard times lately, and he's not able to make these payments. And my wife was a co-signer, so they're contacting her also with phone calls and sending, you know, letters to the house here saying pay up and all this other stuff. So I was just I went to the Secretary of State's office online. I couldn't find them.
Do you want an answer to your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're very suable. I've done so in one, and they paid off my student loan and gave me some money on top of that.
Oh, very good. Great. Good to hear. All right. So how did you establish with them that they were a debt collector? Because they are saying they're not.
Do you ever believe these people lie?
I'm sorry?
I said, do you ever believe these people lie?
Oh, no. I believe you. I'm not that
okay.
naive, Dave. I do realize that liars believe. I was just, like I said, I went to the Secretary of State's office and tried to find out if they're listed as a debt collector, but they're not listed as a debt collector.
Larry, did you end up suing them or just the threat got it done?
No, I sued them.
You did? Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, so that's good news then. Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you, Larry, for the information.
Yeah, they folded fairly easily and gave me a lot more money than I expected.
Well, hey, there you go. Go after them.
Now, Larry, is this out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or somewhere in Pennsylvania?
No, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, because the return address is, I think it's Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or somewhere in Pennsylvania. I know that.
Well, they may
okay.
have some various offices, but
oh, sure they do. Sure they do.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get on with them. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Well, it's time to wrap it up tonight. I will go over the schedule real quick. We have a webinar tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern. And what's the subject matter tomorrow? Jesse, Larry, John,
tomorrow's
anybody?
It's just me. It's FCRA tomorrow and foreclosure.
Okay. FCRA and foreclosure. And then tomorrow night, there's Terry's call. That starts at 8 o'clock Eastern. If you are not on Terry's mailing list, send an email to queensongbird@gmail.com. Just say, I'd like to be on the list. Please do that tonight. Don't wait until tomorrow to do it. Otherwise, you probably won't get the reminder in time. She's a very busy lady, and especially the few hours before the call. Then, of course, on Monday nights, there's Dallas Debt Discussion. We're going on 5 years, never missing a Monday, so you know we're always there. And that starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. It's still on TalkShoe. The PIN for that is 54318. And these are support calls for the information that is in the website. These calls are not a substitute for being a member of the website. You get bits and pieces here. You need to be a member if you really want to get the full information in an organized fashion so that you can utilize it to do what you need to do to stand up for your rights. So, you know, it's hard to beat. You got a 60-day money-back guarantee on it. Get in there and get going. So, Jesse, any last words?
No, that's it, guys. Just thanks for joining us again tomorrow using the FCRA to help you with your foreclosure case and actually make some money, which is the fun part of this whole deal. So, that being said, God bless everybody. Have a great night, and we will talk to you tomorrow, 3 o'clock.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.